Imagine
being that far out, making that error, and still having a 7-second lead.
Yeah, it literally
didn't matter. Where are your drivers, Jake?
Hi everyone, and welcome back to Grid Gals. This is episode 6, and we are going to be recapping the action-packed Australian Grand Prix. Ladies, is there any other way to describe it other than, excuse my language, a complete clusterfuck?
Utter chaos. Complete, utter chaos. I'm still trying to wrap my head around everything that happened, how I feel about everything that happened. I feel like I just need to have like a sit-down session for a couple of hours, discuss point by point, every single thing that happened at the Australian GP.
Well, good thing we're here today, Jacqueline.
We have good news for you.
Wow, it's such a good thing that we have this podcast and you all get to listen to it.
As much as I would love to edit hours and hours of audio, maybe we don't have to go point by point, but I do think there's a lot to talk about.
I think we can start with off the track because it's fun for me.
Yeah, before we get into the carnage, let's talk about the fun parts.
The king of the Australian GP, Danny Ric, back, better than ever, thriving. I enjoyed watching all of the clips throughout the weekend from coming out of Red Bull. They did a couple collabs with famous influencers in the F1 scene. And I don't know, that man, the camera loves him. When there was tension during the Australian GP, the cameraman just found Danny Ric and he flashed a good old smile.
It's like a get-out-of-jail-free card, I feel like, for the cameraman.
It really was, because the whole bar would explode. So Jack and I went to an F1 bar to watch the race, and any time they panned over to Danny Ric, and he literally just, like, give a thumbs up, and the whole bar would just explode in applause. That's all it took.
Honestly, I love that. And also, I just love the spectacle of building up to the weekend. Just, like, the complete shenanigans, right? Like, they literally had Max in a fake mullet. Like, that is... I mean, I'm not even the world's biggest Max fan, obviously. But gold. Gold.
I saw a dance of Gasly coming out on stage, and he just took one of those big cutouts of Daniel's face and was, like, dancing with it because he knows how much the... You know, it's his home... Used to be his home race. I had to catch myself there. But, you know, the crowd just goes wild for Danny Ric, so... That was pretty funny, and I know they're kind of close.
That, actually, did you see anything for Piastri? Because I saw almost nothing. Compared to Danny Ric, I hardly saw any plugs for Piastri.
From the media and, like, the events building up, yes. But during the race, I swear to God, any time they mentioned Piastri, it was, in our hometown favorite, here in Australia. Like, Piastri, like, they constantly, any time they said Piastri's name.
And did the crowd just, like, boo?
Like no, this is, like, the commentators. Like, I'm listening on the broadcast. Yeah. So I don't know what the actual crowd could hear. But any time his name came up, they're like, our hometown favorite. It was almost, it felt purposeful to, like, cement Piastri as the Australian on the grid, since Daniel wasn't technically on the grid. I wouldn't know that, though, from the media.
I totally forgot he was Australian until at the end of the race, because it was the first race that Piastri got points in F1, mm-hmm. and they were talking about, oh, this is so great, it is home race, and I was like, oh, yeah, he is Australian.
The second best Australian driver, who is actually on the grid.
Any other track drama?
I saw a lot of clips, not necessarily drama, but just calling out the drivers that they thought were on suicide watch.
I saw that ranking.
Yeah. Lando, I think this weekend alleviated that probably a little bit. Every time they talked to him pre-race, that man looked like he... No soul. No, like, joy left in him. Just utterly defeated.
Even nothing, like, behind those eyes.
Yeah.
Qualifying, I don't know if you heard when they were like, you've P13. And he's like, yeah, I know. And that was it. It was, like, so, so devastating.
And even, you know, last year when it was still a tough year for McLaren, you still felt, you know, some joy, some positivity coming from him. And now it's just a couple races in and he's just... utterly defeated. Hopefully this turned it around for him and he's Hopefully got some car improvements with the long break coming out.
You know who's probably top of that list after this weekend?
Charlotte Leclerc.
Yeah. That was tough. Like, this whole weekend, I mean, qualifying, not great.
No,
that was, I mean, that was tough to watch. And yeah, that was, you know, how much of it's driver error, how much of it's team strategy, right? Like, we could argue about this forever. But then just the race, right? Like, lap one, and you're like, good God. Good God. Like, you've got to be kidding me, right? Like, at this point, it's almost comical. But nope. There he is, beached in the gravel, like a little whale.
Yeah.
The garage, like the Ferrari garage, they just didn't even look surprised at this point. They're also, I think some of his engineers are also really down in the dumps too. It's just like, well, that happened again.
It's hard to come back from too. Like, once you get going on that path, I feel like it's hard to come in with like a positive attitude, and that's what you need. At least a little bit. Obviously a lot of it is like the car, but like you need like a positive attitude to get like your confidence up, to drive well, to even get any points at all. It's sad.
And I think one of the most heartbreaking parts for me, Stroll. It was just Stroll not looking in his mirrors. Like, just classic Stroll, not looking in his mirrors. Nothing affected Stroll. He had a great race, all things considered.
Okay, yes, and as the Ferrari fan, though, I am going to actually give the counterpoint. It wasn't really Stroll's fault. I honestly think that was an error on Leclerc. And, like, this is coming from a Ferrari fan. Like, I love Leclerc. Watching the replays, I think that Leclerc got a little cocky on that.
That's fair.
Quite honestly, I mean, I don't like Stroll. I don't want to give the man any more credit than I need to, but it's lap one, right? Like, I don't think, if anything, it's just a racing incident. Like, I know, and I mean, I think that's what the FIA ultimately ruled it as, but I actually think Leclerc is in the wrong on that one.
Can we go flag by flag? So, like,
flag by flag, this is, well, this there was a lot.
This is the most red flags that's ever been shown in any F1 race. Which I felt, because I stayed up way past my bedtime to watch this race because of all the delays. But I've almost forgotten all the different drivers that got out at different points and times of the race.
Well, and I think this one was particularly interesting because I feel like had it been a different track, there wouldn't have been as many red flags. They would have been able to take care of it under a safety car.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just due to the nature of it being a street circuit and the intricacies of the Melbourne track, like the gravel, they talk about that a lot, how compared to a lot of the other circuits now don't actually have gravel, they have other types of materials in the runoff area. There were so many that, I mean, it was funny listening to the commentary, they were like, there's no way they're gonna red flag it, but then they did. Yeah, they did. Or there were some of them where it was kind of surprising how long it took for the safety car to come out and even for a yellow flag to come out.
But yeah, you could even tell by the end of the race that the drivers were getting fed up with it.
Like, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, they would have to use the bathroom at some point.
Alonso? They panned to Alonso. He refused to get out of his car. He just was sitting there, ready to go. You could tell he'd already been out of his car at this point twice. Yeah. And there's one lap to go. They're just done at this point.
Well, it's hard to, like, I feel like for the driver, you're in, like, such a mindset. And then to, like, completely have to brake. And you're, like, talking to random people on the circuit or whatever when you're back in the pits. And then to just, like, jump back into the car to get into, like, a racing mindset, I feel like it'd be so difficult to do that so many different times, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the fact that they were standing starts, with the exception of the last red flag, which, like,
it was literally the last lap of the race. What are you supposed to do? I was like, if we do another fucking standing start, like, we've already had three.
Mm-hmm.
And especially after the carnage of the final one, I was like, just end this. Like,
and everyone was super confused. Like, yeah. I think I had overheard some of the commentators, so I was trying to tell our table what I thought was going to happen with the last lap. I'm getting way ahead of myself, though.
I know.
Like, we just need to start with the first red flag.
Yeah, let's back it up.
Because what was that? Lap one?
Yeah, Leclerc, I mean, okay, there were a lot of red flags in the session, but that one was weird because it took a surprisingly long time for the yellow flag to even come out, and then it was clearly a real safety car, not a virtual safety car, to get the, you know, car off the track, but no red flag for that.
And then I think Albon crashed almost immediately after that, it felt like.
Yeah, pretty shortly after that. But that was just driver error. He caught some gravel and spun out. And then he landed pretty halfway on the gravel, halfway on the track. Mm-hmm. And because he had spun out partially in the gravel, there was a cloud of smoke. And so the two drivers behind him almost ran straight into him. I think it was Hulkenberg. Mm-hmm. And that would have been devastating because at that point he was stationary. So thankfully did not have any, you know, it was just his car that was affected, but that did cause them to red flag the session, which stunk for Russell because he had just gone and pitted for tires, I think, on the yellow flag of that before they had switched it officially to a red flag.
Yeah. I think he pitted under Leclerc's safety car.
Ah, yes. That makes sense.
Oh, okay.
And that was the big thing is they were talking about the strategy because Sainz also pitted under Leclerc's safety car.
Yeah, how would you even know?
Right? Like, and they both fall down the order, which is a strategy call that you're making in the moment, right?
Right.
And then how would you know that, what, like 2 minutes later, they're going to red flag the race?
Right.
And that really messed up the race for Russell because he had an amazing start. Right off the bat, he was able to get in front of Max. And, I mean, his qualifying session was great, qualifying second. And so to have him drop so far down the places just because of that timing of that crash must have been a little defeating.
Jack, props to your Mercedes drivers. I know where I'm going, like, way, way back. But you just mentioned he got past Max at the beginning, at the start of the race. And I was, like, devastated first 10 seconds of this race because both the Mercedes drivers got past Max at the beginning of this race.
12 and laps, to be exact. 12 laps they were ahead of Max.
I'm surprised you didn't mention it to begin with.
Yeah, I think it's just the crashes and all of the chaos. It's tough to remember that. At the beginning, yeah, it was looking a little bleak there for Red Bull. Especially Perez wasn't making a lot of moves right off the bat, which I know Catherine has a lot to talk about on that subject.
I do feel like that's the other thing that we kind of failed to mention was Perez in qualifying. I mean, he ended up starting P20 because in Q1 he beached his car.
Yeah, and he definitely blamed the car for that because I think they were doing some fixes on it during practice. So he's like, it's the same issue I was having before. But there was a couple people, Helmut Marko, saying that,
also Catherine Patton,
saying that it was driver error. I mean, it's hard to say. I feel like the driver's going to tend to blame the car over themselves, right?
But watching it in qualifying, even, that was one where he really, it felt like he kind of just lost the car. And he didn't have super high impact when he hit, but same thing, he beached it and he just couldn't get out of the gravel.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he caused a ton of damage, where somebody like, you know, Albon, high speed impact into the barriers, like, kind of a scary crash to watch. Like, that's not what Perez had, where sometimes I feel like, if you which also, sorry to just switch tracks mid-thought, Albon had such a good weekend up until then. Like, his qualifying, he was doing phenomenal. Like, there were points in qualifying where he was, like, second only to Verstappen. And qualifying was actually really fun to watch because it was one of those where the tires were consistently getting better, the track was consistently getting better, and it was just, like, fastest lap after fastest lap. But Albon was performing so well. So to see him, like, get knocked out in, you know, also red flag the race, like, I'm not even a huge Albon fan, but he's such a happy-go-lucky guy. Like, it was a bummer.
I mean, no love lost here for Albon. But, I mean, that was, what, our first red flag, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're saying. How are we only at our first red flag?
My God, I know.
And then it took a while till our second red flag. That was towards the end of the race, about 10 laps to go, and it was Magnussen, another driver error. He hit one of the walls, and his tire popped off, actually in a pretty unsafe way. My understanding is they engineer the cars so that tires don't go flying like that.
Yeah.
But it went flying. Thank goodness it didn't crash. Like,
it almost hit someone too, which I didn't realize until I was watching the replays, because I could see when they red flagged it. At first, again, I was a little surprised because he kind of hobbled almost to, like, the end of the pit lane. And I could just see the tire laying on track, and I was like, okay, it seems like you should be able to just run out and pick that up, right? Like, yellow flag it, sure. I didn't realize there was someone following, like, not so far behind him. And it wasn't, like, a super close, like, narrowly avoided it. But, I mean, if you were that driver, right, everything's happening so fast. It was definitely scary watching the replay. And, again, same thing that we saw with Albon, it was damage to the barriers, which was why they red flagged that one.
Wait. Then when did Russell get out?
A little bit before that, and his tire, that's when his car caught on fire.
Yeah.
And let me say, the man was taking his sweet time getting out of that vehicle. Like, if my car was on fire, I don't know if he just couldn't tell how on fire it was, or I was starting to panic a little bit. I'm like, mm-hmm. is this man not going to get out of the car in time? Like, he just took his sweet time getting out.
And I know drivers have to do practice to see, I mean, they have to be within a certain time period of getting out of the car. Like, they have some type of regulation on that. He was definitely taking his time on that.
And this is when I started to get an inkling that this race was a little bit of the destroyer of dreams here. You know, oh Russell. My God.
The destroyer of dreams.
Russell having such a strong start to the weekend. And ladies, let me just talk about my fantasy team for a second.
Let's hear it.
Do you want to guess how many of my five drivers DNF'd this weekend?
Oh, hang on. Well, obviously, because of the point in the conversation, I'm assuming you had Russell.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
I feel like you have Albon.
I did not, actually.
Oh, I feel like you have K-Mag.
I do. I definitely have K-Mag.
He's a cheap one in fantasy who's, like, usually gives you decent points.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You have Charles Leclerc, don't you? Oh,
I forgot to change. I was supposed to change him out to Sainz.
Wait, who else do you have?
Ocon.
Oh, Jesus. To.
And the only one I had that gave me points was Alonso. I think most of my drivers gave me negative points.
Please tell me you turboed Alonso.
Nope.
Of course.
I forgot to switch my turbo, yeah. too.
Who did you turbo?
Claire?
Oh, God.
Okay, first of all, if there's one thing that three races into the season you should learn, it's never turbo Leclerc.
Yep.
The man has 6 points. Okay, I'm sorry. I know we have a lot to get through, but can we just acknowledge? He was, like, in contention for the World Drivers Championship last year, really came in this season with high hopes. We're three races in. He has the same points as, like, fucking McLaren.
Yeah. Yeah, not a good look for me and my fantasy team.
Or for Ferrari!
Yeah, that too. That too.
Because what did he have last year at this point? It was like 71 or something.
Yeah! Yeah, it was comfortably double digits. Like, more than 10 times the points he has now.
It's just mean for me to say at this point.
I can understand why the man's a little down.
Oh, it's something like 71. Bitch, you know the exact fucking number. Okay, anyway.
Just been waiting to whip out this fact all conversation.
Back to this insane race. Yes, Russell did DNF. And, yeah, really scary watching him, like, just chill in that car as it was catching fire. But that wasn't actually a red flag.
That wasn't a red flag, no.
Because he was able to just pull over and they got it more or less, no problem.
But didn't Albon's red flag and restart cause, like, another red flag?
No. You're thinking of K-Mag's red flag and restart, which brings us to the third red flag. So, what, K-Mag had what, like, I don't know, there were like 8 laps left by the time they, you know, do the original yellow flag and then red flag it. Maybe even fewer.
And I think at this point, I'd even remarked to Catherine at the bar, I was like, Jesus Christ, there's only like 10 laps to go. Can we just get it over with?
Yeah.
And little did I know that there was going to be yet another red flag.
It was, okay, because I think they went to restart the race and it was lap 56 of 58. So you're like, okay, already kind of wild to have a standing start. Our third standing start of the race.
Did you see who was at this race? Little side point.
Like, in the crowd, watching?
The press was all over this. Michael Massey was at this race. It's the first F1 race he's attended.
I did see
and
that.
And they had a standing start. With, what, I think it's like 2 laps left, right?
Yeah.
Because they had the, it's technically 57 out of 58, but you have to do the 57 and the 50th lap. So you have 2 laps left. And they did it.
I think that's honestly the only reason they didn't do a standing restart for like the last lap, which yeah. we'll get there.
Yeah.
There was yet another red flag. But yeah, I mean, after Magnussen's red flag,
right.
they did do a standing restart.
Yep.
And that's where the chaos ensued.
Yeah, because how many people were out after that one?
Well, it all started with your boy Carlos.
I know.
Running into Alonso. Spins Alonso out. He goes into the gravel at turn 1, I think. It was like right off the bat.
It was a restart. Yeah, it was right
away. It was right off the bat. And
then
that. Oh,
and if you listen to Alonso's radios, he was ready to kill me.
Oh,
because
yeah.
at that point, he was in like third.
Yeah, because
it was Max.
Hamilton. Alonso.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Hamilton, the entire race, was complaining about his tires and was just...
To the point, it was almost comical, and it was like, okay, this, like, has to be a bluff. Like, you're messing with Red Bull at this point, like...
Yeah. His engineers were annoyed. They were like, Lewis understood Lewis. He's like, I feel like they're catching me. And by them, it's Alonso behind him. His tires were fine. They were fine.
But Alonso was catching him.
Yeah, at one point, but then there was, like, he definitely got off the pace a little bit.
Well, what I think was interesting about this race, aside from, like, literally everything, was when they were talking about the pace that different cars were setting and how you could clearly see the tire management in action. Because there was one point where Hülkenberg was down in, like, 7th or 8th, and he had fastest lap.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, that just goes to show how much the front of the pack is managing their tires and, like, really watching the pace. Because, you know, everybody wanted this to theoretically be a one-stop race. And so you've got all these people on hards trying to preserve longevity. Yeah, jokes on them. Like, there were so many safety cars. But it was kind of fascinating from a tire management standpoint in the, like, I don't know, whatever, 40, 35 laps where there was, you know, not insane excitement.
So, Sainz, allegedly, takes out Alonso. I know he's not going to say that. He did, right?
Well, the FIA did.
Yeah, and his radio messages were sad. They're like, just tell them to wait until I can come talk to them, and we'll, like, we'll clarify it, we'll figure it out.
Like, add this man to your watch list.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a little cruel in my book. I think that punishment. In a normal race, 5 seconds wouldn't have dropped you.
Right.
8 places. That was a little severe to me. Because of how they did the last lap of the race was just a glorified lap to just they under the safety car.
Yeah, I was gonna say, okay, did they actually finish under the safety car, or the safety car was technically in, but it wasn't, like, cleared to race? There was no overtaking. It was basically a parade.
Yes. Basically a parade, so you can't, when you have a 5 second time penalty like that and everyone's bunched up, of course you're gonna drop 7-8 places.
Well, it wasn't just that he dropped 7-8 places. It was after the complete chaos of, okay, so Sainz caused the spin out with Alonso. You had the two Alpines just, like, after another into the wall.
Yep.
So they both DNF.
Stroll was out too.
Stroll's out. Like, just, again, chaos everywhere. They basically look at the field, and I think so much had happened that they reverted back to the order of the restart after Magnussen's red flag.
Yeah, so the technical thing is you have to be past sector one for them to determine the order. So since they didn't make it past sector one, they had to revert back to when they last knew the order, which was the last lap, or when they started. But then it was only the cars. This is what sucked. It was only the cars that could still operate and go around for this, like, parade of the last lap.
Which, you know who else got really screwed in that and, like, was just kind of a bummer? Bottas.
Yeah.
Because Bottas actually, in all of this chaos, managed to keep his nose clean, gained a ton of places to the point where he was, like, what, like, 5th or something? And they were like, to the back of the grid with you, Bottas.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Hülkenberg. Mm-hmm. He popped up into 4th. Yeah. Steiner was fuming so after that mad. Call. I got a notification at, like, 4 a.m. that Steiner was about ready to fight the FIA. They submitted a formal complaint.
I'm sure they all did.
Yeah. I mean, I need to go back and listen to Steiner's radio, because he probably was just beside himself when they restarted the order.
It was pretty unfair, especially with how well we were seeing the Alpines do, too. To have them completely out of the race and not just, like, in a perfect world, I think for me, I would have been like, okay, let's just have the race end at, what, 57 laps? And just be like, okay, how you guys were starting that grid is how it should be.
Yeah, because
it's the only fair thing.
Yeah, it feels so unfair to be like, hey, we're going to do this standing restart. We knock out, what, like, another 4 cars? And then, oh, hey, well, everybody else, doesn't even matter where you actually ended up. We're just going to revert back to what it was.
Because it's not your fault if someone hits you and takes you out, and then you just lose every single point just because you... I mean, I guess that's how the race... That's, like, how F1 goes, right? But it was such a bummer to see for the other drivers.
I felt so bad for Gasly, because it was Ocon that didn't give him enough room and just clipped him out.
Because he came back on the track, and I don't know if... I mean, some things you just can't react to, right? That was a sad one to see.
Especially, too, after this was going to be a race where he was going to have one of the better finishes he's had in years, arguably. I mean, he was steadily in 4th or 5th the entire time.
Okay, Max was already out in front. Hamilton was already out in front. Like, they both got away clean. The person who benefited the biggest was Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I love Alonso. And, like, I do agree with kind of bullshit that he got taken out. But, I mean, like you said, that's kind of what happens. And so because his car was still operational, even though he got flung into the gravel from signs hitting him, he was able to rejoin, albeit at the back of the pack. But once they reshuffled the order, he was back in third and then took his little victory lap basically to end up on the podium.
I don't know if you guys saw in the pit lane when they were getting all the cars in order. They were like pushing Alonso's car to the front and every other car around them was just like so pissed about it. So funny.
He's probably just chilling like, yeah.
Like, push me to the front.
Stay mad.
Because I didn't see this part, but there were more DeVries and Sargeant both got out too in that.
Well, yeah, I think Sargeant hit DeVries.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that was on Sargeant. But I feel like the other one, like, you know, it was absolutely wild because before they reshuffled and reset it, like, Tsunoda was in fourth or something.
Oh, wow.
And, like, you could see after they, again, red flag it for the third and final time, he's just standing in the pit lane kind of looking around like,
do I get to keep it?
Yeah, like, oh, my God, like, oh, I'm going to finish fourth? Like, this is, I don't know if that might have been his best career finish.
Yeah, in Formula 1.
And he's just like, oh, my God, like, not sure whether he can believe it or not. And, like, I mean, thank God he didn't.
Oh, Yuki.
The one thing I will say I'm a little upset about is that they painted Checo's drive as, like, a recovery drive that he ended in, what, like, fifth? From, like, 20th to fifth? Because for the longest time, like, it really wasn't that much of a recovery drive. I think all these crashes really worked in his favor. Because I remember we were talking at the bar, he was stuck behind Norris for probably 25 laps.
It was insane.
He did gain, I mean, I think he gained, what, like, 12 places or something before all the chaos happened?
I think he gained maybe 8 or 10.
Okay, watching him in the Red Bull car, like, it would have been an impressive recovery drive if he didn't have that car.
Right.
You know, anybody else gaining 10, 12 places starting from the back of the grid, wow. Like, good for you. You rock. But Checo in the Red Bull, you're like, I kind of expected a little more. And
it took him a long time.
Yeah, it really did.
And you're behind Norris. Like, I know they got points this weekend, but, I mean, they only got points because half of the grid was out.
Yeah.
Well, one battle that was really fun to watch was the Norris-Hulkenberg battle. And I think it was for, what, 7th or 8th or something? And there was a move where Hulkenberg was defending beautifully. And he even made a move that Norris, you know, had him like, oh, like, you should need to call and investigate that. It was basically him kind of, quote-unquote, swerving. But it was so small that it was just enough to get Norris to back off without it actually
counting the swerve.
Yeah. It, like, he really rode that fine line. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was a fun one to watch.
Did you see that Perez got voted driver of the day?
What?
I did not.
Yeah. That was another thing where I was just like, okay, just like you said it before, would have been impressive in any other car. I did not think that his drive warranted driver of the day.
Well, that's kind of why I was like, everyone's giving him like all this praise for it. And I'm like, it's still like cool. You can make up all those places, but I'm like, it's not an authentic recovery drive to me. Like, because you gain so much because of all these other drivers getting out.
Well, and I know that this track in particular is known for being really hard to overtake on, but they added a new DRS section and they were saying it was almost like too much because drivers were getting so much DRS that you had people who were purposefully like not even trying to pass the car in front of them, but just getting close enough to use the DRS to defend against the person behind them with DRS. And like the DRS section was so long that they were like, you know, it's almost like a little bit too much of an advantage. Where Melbourne previously had been a track where it's like, okay, it's really hard to overtake here. And they were like, this is the most overtakes in the history of this entire like Australian GP.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so they were like, okay, like, we like the new DRS zone, but dial it back a little. And so I feel like, especially knowing that, yes, it's a hard track to overtake on. So, I mean, any street races, right? Mm-hmm. So to come up all that way, great. But then you, like, we saw so many overtakes. Granted, we didn't see one person do as many as he did, but, like, you're in a Red Bull.
It was out, like, 10, 12 seconds ahead of Lewis. Max's car was for like the majority of the race.
I wasn't gonna say it.
Well, I said it for you, keepers. Don't say I never did anything for you.
Do we feel like we've covered this completely now?
I do have one point that I want to make because I'm a McLaren hater.
Whoa. How the turntables.
Strong left.
More so just a Piastri hater. There was one point in the race where Piastri did tap Yuki. He had a little bit of a hit.
I don't know that I saw that.
Also, I thought you basically said you weren't a Yuki fan now, but I respect that you hate Piastri enough to become a Yuki fan again.
Yeah, why you gotta... I mean...
I think, like, ranking-wise, still Yuki above Piastri.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I would say I feel, like, a little bit above neutral for Yuki. Like, I don't hate him. I don't, like, love him anymore, but...
It's like when you call somebody pretty decent.
You know, you're like, yeah, I guess it's positive. It's like a little stronger than neutral.
Doesn't feel great, but like, okay.
I feel like it got overshadowed and obviously the rest of the chaos, and there were people that were very affected by, you know, other crashes, but I was like, all right, Piastri. Because there was, it was like Yuki, Piastri, Norris, Hülkenberg down in that pack for a while, and there were some close calls too with people trying to overtake, but I'm sad that he got his first points. And like this, I mean, he wasn't on track to get them. He didn't really earn them.
I love this spite from Jacqueline.
Like, honestly, did he earn it? Like,
you know what? I don't give a fuck if it's your home race. Justice for Yuki.
She's like, there's another Australian on the track that's not Daniel Ricciardo. Fuck him.
Who would have thought? I mean, you didn't see any Oscar chants going on over the weekend.
I did like the one point that the commentators made, though, when I forget what it was that happened. Oh, it was Max spun out. Granted, he was so far ahead of the pack that, like, it literally didn't matter. He went from, like, a 12-second lead to, like, a 7-second lead. Like, ooh, wow. Like, you can literally hit the grass. But you could see the grass on his tires. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they even knew what happened was because the crowd, like, screamed so loud. Because nobody was watching him.
No one's paying attention,
He was, like, so far ahead that they're like, oh my god, and then they finally zoom in and they're like, oh, I just hit the grass a little bit. Like, you can see it on his tires, he's fine.
My brother was texting me because he was watching the race at a different bar, and he just sent me a clown emoji. He's like, imagine being that far out front and making that error.
Imagine being that far out
making that error and still having a 7-second lead.
Yeah, it literally
didn't
matter.
Where are your drivers, Jake?
Is Touché. Jake still a McLaren fan?
Last time I checked, he's still a Lando fan, yeah.
I'm a Lando fan too, though, so.
Okay, well, maybe we'll, like, give him a pass then, because it's a tough season.
Yeah. For him. We might
be. Is he going to be in sad boy season with Lando all season?
Yeah, we might need to do a wellness check on him at some point. Hopefully this race gave him a little pep in his step.
I feel like we've sufficiently covered this race, gals.
A little bit of yo-yoing, but to be fair, that's kind of what it felt like watching it.
Yes.
I feel like I need to go back and watch certain parts now, because maybe it was just because we were up so late and it was way past my bedtime, but man.
Jack and I left before the podium ceremonies.
It was not happening.
I knew it was going to be a wild race. I had to watch it on a delay. I wasn't with the gals this weekend, but everybody was like, oh, it's a 3-hour race. It's a 3-hour race. It's going to be crazy. And I start watching it in between, you know, working, whatever. And you don't have to keep pausing it. I've got meetings. Fine. And then I'm like, we're on lap, like, you know, 50-something. And there's like an hour and 20 minutes left of the broadcast. And I'm like, there should be maybe 40. Right? You know, the podium celebrations take a while, to be fair. But we keep creeping. Like, the laps keep ticking down. And I'm like, there's too much time left. Something happens. I don't know what happens yet, but something happens. And then I see it all unfold. And then, I mean, just laps 56 through 58. I mean, I had to go back and even just rewatch parts of it. Because I'm like, what? Like, what's going on? Which I'm kind of glad I watched this one with a delay because it was so insane. I can't even imagine being at a bar at like 2 a.m. trying to keep track of what was going on.
It was wild. One other fun thing, I guess, that happened in the chaos. I don't know if this is actually fun, but they had a security breach.
What?
At the GP. And so they were still moving cars off the track, and fans got on the track. They're trying to remove cars with the cranes, and all of the fans were, like, flooding and,
like,
walking
mid-race?
Around. I couldn't tell if it was mid-race when they had red flag the session after that standing start that was chaos, or if it was after and they had just originally moved the cars off to a temporary spot to finish. But that could have also led to why there was such a long delay. Yeah, mm-hmm. People got on the track and were running around, and quite a significant amount of people, like a couple hundred.
I don't know why I find that so amusing.
It feels right for Australia.
Yeah.
I've never been, but...
And I felt so bad for the crane lift drivers because they were trying to move two cars and there's just people all around them.
Oh, God.
Like, they couldn't even move the cars, and you're just, like, trying to do your job.
Definitely a side note, but when you're lifting the crane, apparently the drivers are supposed to stay by the car so they can push away photographers. So having all those people there would be really, really bad for the teams, because most of, like, your intellectual property or whatever, your technology is underneath the car. So, like, photographers obviously take pictures of the wings and the tails and stuff, but it's underneath the car that, like, those photos are, like, really, really top secret. So even, like, David Coulthard, who's, like, one of the commentators this race, when Checo spun out in qualifying, he's like, I'm surprised that Checo didn't get chewed out by the team for not staying by the car until it was on, like, the truck to come back. Wow. Because when it gets pulled up by the crane, that's what gives all the cameramen opportunities to take photos of underneath the car.
I never knew that. I mean, it makes a lot of sense when you explain it, but yeah. I mean, I guess if you're a driver, that it's definitely your job to protect that.
Mm-hmm. Because who else is allowed to be next to the car when it crashes like that? It's only you as a driver.
Damn, yeah. I think it was, like, the Williams and a different car, so I don't know how top secret that information is. But true. Still, I mean, and also just the chaos of just hundreds of people being on the track where it's not safe for them to do so.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, that race did not disappoint, and thank goodness we had an action-packed race going into a three-week break, so we'll have to find some fun topics to talk about.
What's up next? Baku?
I believe so, yeah. Azerbaijan?
Jack's favorite race. Which, I mean, honestly, I love a street race, so why not?
Well, if you like what you heard this episode, you can visit us at gridgals.com. We have links to all of our socials, and you can listen to all of our episodes on our website, as well as anywhere you get podcasts.
And that's the checkered flag for this session. We'll see you back on the grid next week.